coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to this fantastic pre-recorded Tuesday night broadcast. While I am here in studio with Billy Joe Kane, I'm not actively here. So I'm out on the road. I'm out working as typical. Billy Joe Kane, welcome back to the show. Billy Joe is our good friend. He is the founder of Radical Imp, the Education Foundation. He has been working in the world of VR empathy building for years and years, specifically targeting the world of abuse, the world of human trafficking to begin with, but now you are applying this technology and these techniques that you've learned to abuse situations of all kinds and being able to help people everywhere help identify and empathize with those who are abused.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks so much. Chris, how long has it been?
Six years? Seven, 25 years
since we've known each other?
Yeah.
We've been working on this thing together?
It was a year and a half into Dudes and Beer.
Wow.
Something like that. It was within the first year of Dudes and Beer that I found you at Classic Game Fest.
Right.
You were set up. And it was a setup.
Wasn't it? With the HTC Vive and the crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. We started way back then, and we were obviously working on human trafficking to get people to understand it. And since then, we have been going out and we've educated over 10,000 people across the United States. We have licensees in 10 states. We're super excited about this.
So proud of you.
Thank you so much. We've made differences in so many people's lives, and people have come and they've told us about it. And the bottom line is that what we're finding is that our software helps people understand abuse, and it helps people understand the victim and predator mentality. And so we're trying to take that and expand it. So some of the people that use our software, we have middle schools and high schools, and we're finding that those users, what they're doing with it is they are using this software with their counselors and their students. And so when the students put the headsets on, it talks a lot about abuse. It talks about family violence, talks about abandonment. It talks about not getting enough attention from your parents, talks about how difficult it is, you know, to basically be a teenager. And what the counselors like about the software is that it's very real. It mimics real life and real life stories and things that people can identify with. And it helps those kids actually trust that those adults are going to get them some help.
Well, and that's really a big part of it, is that trust, especially when you're a teenager. I was very, very fortunate. Like I was telling you earlier, I'm out doing things for my high school right now. I came from a very lucky high school in the fact that we had teachers that cared. We had a community that cared. You know, we had very, very involved parents. It was fantastic. It really was. And it was amazing. But not every school district is like that. Not every school is like that.
No,
not every school has the involved parents that they used to 25 years ago.
That's one of the things that was so surprising about this particular school. They're in Arkansas, that they use our software. The principal, he said, he'd been a principal there for 27 years. And one of the challenges that they have is that he said that unfortunately a lot of the parents are just not good role models. And so he's in a place where the parents of these children that are his students, they don't know how to teach kids the difference between right and wrong.
Mm.
And so they're using our software as a place for those kids to kind of take their temperature. And when the kid takes the headset off, then they can actually have a real conversation about that kind of stuff with them, about a specific example of a realistic kid situation that they can discuss as a group.
And just cross-section there, like, not many people are aware. Little Rock, Arkansas is quite literally one of the gang capitals of the United States.
Wow, I didn't
like
know that.
When it comes to like street gang, things like that, they are inundated.
Wow.
It's pretty incredible. And you would never think that thinking Arkansas. It's like thinking like Mobile, Alabama, they got a big street gang problem, you know? You don't think about that. You think major city. You think, you know, Houston.
Yeah,
you think Detroit,
millions and millions of people.
LA, you know, things like that. Not necessarily Little Rock, Arkansas.
Right.
But there have been documentaries about it. And yeah, this is an endemic problem all over the country where, unfortunately, and sure, a lot of it is even eco-diversified by the fact that, you know, many times, you're dealing with a lot more single-parent homes than you're used to. Mm-hmm. B, you're dealing with a lot more two-parent working homes that you used to, that you didn't used to.
And that's what's going on across the country. We are now in a situation where both parents have to work so that they can survive. I mean, you've seen the numbers.
Well, and seeing those things, seeing those small cues, and let's start getting into, because this is what's important with really, any abuse situation is the idea of grooming, the idea of getting somebody used, the idea of getting somebody used to the abuse being the norm.
That's right.
You know,
grooming can be, like you said, it could be about abuse. Normally, when people are talking about grooming, what they're really talking about is they want to normalize the conversation and normalize discussing sex.
Sure.
Or, you know, and having that become normal, whether they're trying to talk you into sending a nude picture of yourself, or if they're trying to talk you into looking at pornography, or if they are, if they're physically in your space and touching you and things like that, they want to normalize all of that stuff. And this is one of the things that, that principal was telling me, that, a lot of these children do not understand that there are supposed to be personal boundaries, that people are crossing those boundaries constantly. Mm. One example he gave me is he had a young girl who had just gotten her GED and she wanted to get a hug. So she comes into him and she's like, you know, oh, I want to get a hug. And he's like, when I can't give you a hug because I am in a position of power. If I'm going to show you how a hug works, we'll sit down on a chair. So they sat down on a bench and he gave her like a side hug.
Yeah.
And 2 weeks later, she came in and she turned in some of her family members for sexually assaulting her, because that one moment where he showed respect for her body boundaries showed her that she needed to have body boundaries.
That's right.
At 17 years old.
And that other things that were occurring in her life that
That's right.
were normal were not.
That's
and
right.
should not have been.
She did not know what normal was.
That's right. That's right. And that's one
of the things we're really trying to push right now. We're trying to get people to understand that they have body boundaries. We need to get them to understand their names of their body parts, because that's another issue with children. If they don't know the name of their body
Absolutely.
Parts, that is a separate body part, that is theirs and nobody's supposed to be touching it. If they don't understand that's not part of their leg or their lap, it's like there's a whole lot of stuff that's very basic, you know, that you and I grew up with. That doesn't seem to be as basic anymore.
Yeah.
And it's really troublesome.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of it is very troublesome in that, right? Now, I've got a 7-year-old coming on 7.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, by the time this airs, he will be 7.
Congratulations, Dad. 7 years.
And yeah, it is one of those, like, as somebody who worked with 5, 6, 7-year-olds for, mm-hmm. for a few years in
yep.
life, There's a switch that happens that occurs in that age. And there's a few switches that happen until adulthood where moments of realization happen. Dalvis is going through that moment right now where he's seeing differences. He's seeing
right.
differences and explaining those differences, you know.
And he's picking up stuff from, you know, as you work with a child and you're educating them and you're kind of programming them and teaching them prompts, if you will.
Absolutely.
When they go out of your sight, you're
Social
not in charge of what's going
morals.
On. Right. And he comes back and brings you, oh, let me tell you what happened at so-and-so's house. Oh, my gosh. The stuff that my friends tell me that their children are bringing back nowadays, it's outrageous.
I will say that is probably my proudest point as a parent is that, and I hope to God he keeps it that way. I reward him for it. I thank him for it. I laud him for it. When I go and pick him up from school, he'll come out and immediately be like, I had a great day at school today. I didn't get in trouble at all.
That's a good place to start.
And if he gets in trouble, he lets us know.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not a point of shame. It's a point of let's work on it. Let's work on it together, buddy. And that open communication of don't be ashamed if something wrong happened.
Or
don't be afraid to come tell me.
I have a story for you.
Because something like that happened. Because
right.
the earlier you can institute that, the better off you're going to be down the line. You're building a barrier of trust where there is nothing that will diminish my love for you. There is no kind of trouble you can get in will make me think less of you.
Unconditional love that will last forever, no matter
That's right. You're creating a beautiful barrier of trust to let that kid win something.
And you've got to earn that. And you've been working on that for seven years.
That's it. You have to nurture it. You have to keep nurturing it.
Jackie and I, we have two kids. They're now 24 and 25, which is also unbelievable. But we spent a lot of time with those kids, teaching them that whatever they have to tell us is totally okay. There's nothing wrong with that. If they break something or something went wrong, they need to tell us. What we told them was, like, look, if you break something, just tell us. You're never going to be in trouble for breaking something. But if you don't tell us and we go in there and we touch it and it falls to pieces, we're probably going to be pretty upset. It's like, I would rather you tell me that you broke the whatever. And so the kids would always had that relationship with us, which is why we wound up finding out that grooming had hit us.
Yeah.
Like, my boss, I was working on a project and this guy was calling the house on the landline, not even on a cell phone, that he would call the house and sometimes the kids would answer. And so he would talk to them. He had known them for years. Yeah. And then one day he's talking to them about how to clean their, body parts, what pornography sites they're supposed to look at. And they asked us, they're like, why is he telling us these things? And it was at that moment that we realized that all of the work that we had spent in being open with their children and talking to them about this stuff and telling them it's okay and they can always talk to us about everything and we're never going to get them in trouble for they say, it paid off.
Absolutely.
And I have found that there are very few children that have that kind of relationship with their parents.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of work.
I did.
To be a parent is, to really be active is very, very complicated and difficult.
I did youth ministry for about 10 years of my life and worked everything from age 4 all the way to age 40. I taught adults things like that too. But for 10 years of my life, I saw kids grow through that phase, through the age of 4 to 14. I saw their older brothers and sisters come and go, things like that. So it's interesting to, and even as a teacher in a school where you have generational families coming through, it's interesting to see that arc and see how those things change over time, even as parents. And even right now, me and a buddy of mine were having the phone call or having the conversation on the way home yesterday about screen time.
Oh, wow.
Screen time in our kids. He's got a little girl that's about my boy's age, and he plays all kinds of games. There have been a couple times, and my boy.
Yep.
He is active as can be.
Yep.
He doesn't care. He will go take a group of 10 strangers on a tour and make it up because you folks look like you need some entertainment.
There you go.
Come here and let me show you. But there was a time where he was playing his games, and I heard him talking, and it wasn't his typical, like, narration that he does while he plays, where he's just talking out loud what he's doing, or talking to himself and responding to himself, things like that.
Sure.
He was very specifically answering questions. And I was like, who are you talking to? He said, I don't know.
Alarm.
And I was like, whoa, hold on. What are we playing over there, dude? And granted, it was a game that he was allowed to play, but we didn't realize that a setting was off. And it's very common. It was just the fact of, like, I had noticed the fact that he was getting upset. He was getting upset and kept saying, like, come on, guys, stop doing that. Come on, guys, stop. And he was playing a game where it was kind of like King of the Hill. He'd worked really hard to get to the hill. He'd worked really hard to get his items. He sees people. You're a game designer.
Sure.
What's the object of the game at that point? You're the sole survivor, and I'm going to jack you for your goods. That's what it is. This is like, mini Grand Theft Auto.
Right.
Like, my job now is to come up, beat you down, take your things that you've worked hard for, and be the conqueror and win. As a six-year-old, he doesn't get that yet.
Gotcha.
And I was like, that's some hard nuances, bud. And unfortunately, they're using some really hard big boy words because they're teasing each other the way big kids do, things like that. It's called taunting. And no, it's not really nice, but realizing that he was talking to strangers And he was having an active voice conversation. And granted, they were teenagers, things like that. Like, I ended up pulling his headphones off and listening. They weren't like older people. But they could have been. They could have been. And we had to have the conversation of why that wasn't safe for him.
That's right.
You know, and the fact of, I'm not trying to keep you from fun. I'm trying to keep you safe, bud. And right. Unfortunately, there are some people out there who would like nothing more than to sit back and play a game with a sweet young boy via distance without him knowing what bad things they have in mind.
Yeah, it's, I mean, one of the things that is, God, I don't even know the right way to lead into it. A lot of people think that they're going to give their, you know, give children the access to the internet. They're like, oh, we're going to give you access to the internet. What you're really doing many times is you are giving the internet access to your children.
Access to them.
And that is scary,
something,
scary stuff.
That's something that we talked about a long time ago, and I need to get him back on the show. Arshon McCleskey helps head up the UT Center for Identity. He is a former Secret Service agent. We used to regularly have the conversation. He is the reason why I do not put my son's name with a picture of my son on social media.
Oh man, I've got a video
because
to show you.
Because otherwise I would be tying his name to his biometric data, and I'm already without his consent giving his biometric data away to a system. Without his consent, how many emancipation cases will we start seeing in 10 years? Because parents have given away their biometric data of their kid
for
10 years solid.
There's a term for it now. It's called sharenting. So the idea is, and you can find, I'll send you a link to a YouTube video that's really good. They took this kid, they took some pictures that this family had put up online, and they animated it. They aged the daughter. They aged her, and then they put a voice on it and basically had their daughter at mid-20s talking to this couple that go into the movie theater. So they go into the movie theater, and they're like, oh, we're going to do this. And the family's like, what is going on? So it's like they know everything. It's like, if you talk about your kid and your dog and this kind of stuff, then they can go reach out to your kid, and they're like, oh, I've got your puppy. I need you to come down to the street corner to come get it. And it's like, your kid is going to go run right out there. The stuff that the stuff that can really mess a kid up, they're smart. This is what these people do for a living.
Yeah. And the same, I will be the first one to admit it, Billy. I've been taken for money.
Oh, I have
by
too.
People online.
I have too.
I've been taken for money.
Sure.
My mother's been taken for money. Mm-hmm. If you think that they will take grown-ups for money and can deceive them, imagine what they can do to a kid or a teenager or somebody else.
Well, it's interesting that you say that about our parents and things like that. I've known people that have lost millions of dollars.
Yeah.
That have had their family, gotten phone calls and say, I need your password to get into this thing. I've known people that have been, that have had their grandmother, actually one of my licensees said his grandmother got a phone call, from someone saying that he was in prison and that he needed to, that grandma needed to send money to this one guy in the middle.
So that he could middleman it.
Yeah.
And Johnny said to call you.
That's right. And so luckily grandma called another uncle, and the uncle said, no, he put the kibosh on that.
Yeah.
But it, with the amount of, what is it called? Voice cloning that they have now with AI, with chatbots.
Oh, you don't need much.
You don't need much at all. I think it's 3 seconds of somebody's audio, and it sounds close enough that you could fake it. And so, you know, with a family, you need to have like your safe words. You know, if I say banana, you need to say pineapple.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's some serious stuff that we need to be worrying about, being concerned about.
That's right. And I quite literally make people pass tests. There was a guest that I was literally talking to another guest about, because they were the ones who hooked us up.
Mm-hmm.
And this guest hadn't been on social media in a long time. And I was like, hey, man, have you heard from him? Like, I've tried reaching out. I've tried texting. I know he's not on social media. Like, he was taking a break for a long time. But I was just wanting to catch up, maybe have him on a show, you know, see how he's doing, seeing how the model rockets are going, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, I got a Facebook invite from that guest that I was looking for.
Oh, man.
Not even joking.
Uh-huh.
And it began. And I was like, hey, how you doing?
Don't give him anything
to
work with.
How do we know each other?
Right.
How do we know each other? It's now like, I am now CAPTCHA. How many LinkedIn invitations
are you getting recently?
Oh my God.
It is out of my control.
And, you know what's crazy is LinkedIn literally became like a hot garbage fire.
Oh yeah.
And I'm so sorry. Like it was a point of pride. My LinkedIn game was strong, Billy.
Yeah.
And I'm bringing it back. I'm bringing it back. But
yeah, it got to a point. It got to a point where
everybody was a hard pressure salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
Every single connection that was coming to me was that, you know,
my wife and I, we don't trust anybody that friends us on Facebook. Anybody that tries to friend us on LinkedIn, we ask those CAPTCHA type questions I want to know, is this really that person that I met yesterday or not?
And if
where did we meet? You know, literally, it's crazy.
Yeah. And, you know, here's the thing for, I'm going to look right at the camera for all you elderly folk out there, for all of you that are, for anybody. Anybody really. I say elderly. Anybody.
If you have a connection to the internet or you do banking online or you have anything.
You've been hacked already.
You're already hacked. That's
if you purchased anything from Amazon ever, you've been hacked. All right. Your information is out there. Number two, remember, companies will never call you. Microsoft will never just randomly email you about your account.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. It's not what happens. They're not going to call, hey, how you doing? We were trying to do some stuff with your Microsoft. And like, no, it's not how it works. So
no, it's not.
That's a huge, huge clue. When a major corporation reaches out to you, and I'll be honest, like I have a digital avatar. And that happened because I woke up in Vegas one time, like 3:34 in the morning, getting ready for a 5:30 a.m. call, and looked at my phone and just saw something about my Facebook account, my Facebook ad account, that there was a copyright violation in it. Because of that, I'd been locked out and I needed to log back in. So I clicked the link at 4:35 a.m., Billy.
I'm with you, man.
And I was hacked. About 2 hours later, a buddy of mine after breakfast texted me. He's like, hey, you may want to go to your Facebook page. There's some pretty hardcore pornography on there.
Oh.
So I immediately went and kicked myself off my... I immediately went, joined Facebook as somebody else, went to my pages, gave that person permission to everything, and then kicked myself off Facebook and reported my own profile.
Nice.
And once things cleared out and they got rid of things and all that, immediately, as soon as I was able to, I went and got verified.
Right.
Things have changed. But also because that stuff is cycling through a different email, I literally get about 10 alerts a day.
Wow. Billy.
Almost 10 a day, 10 phishing things a day telling me, hey, something's up with your Facebook. Hey, go look at your Facebook. And I know not a single one of them are real because they're coming through to that avatar account.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
But that's also my backdoor back into my system. If I get hacked again, I can log in.
I have a spam account.
Yeah.
It's literally just called Spamtastic.
Well, it's also the account that I show Facebook on whenever we're on air, because at that point, it's not showing personal messages. It's not showing personal connections.
Right.
It's not showing pictures of my kid, things like that, because I don't follow myself online.
I mean, we have to take our own privacy and security extremely seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much money that's associated with all this stuff. Like even my Gmail and Facebook accounts are so interconnected with my business.
Oh, yeah.
With my nonprofit, with everything that I'm doing in my life. It's like if I lost my Facebook accounts for some weird reason, I mean, it would mess me up. If I lost my Google accounts, that would mess me up seriously.
Yeah.
I have to be very cautious about what I post online. Not just because of the general concern that I have about hacking, but I'm concerned that if I post something that's going to upset the censors, that they will take away my Google account or take away my Facebook account. And that will lock me out of so much stuff. It's all very scary. And so it's like a big house of cards that if I wind up at like anybody can do at 4:30 in the morning, yeah. click that one link that, yeah. or if you get a text message on your phone, there's that SMS with that real weird link. Yeah. And it just happened that you accidentally clicked it as it popped up on your screen and you weren't paying attention. Man,
Bad things can happen, and bad things happen real quick. Bad roads happen real quick. And yeah, that's where the communication with people is important. That's where the communication with, once again, your kids is important. That's where the communication with the community is important.
And you know, and also with your parents, you know, yeah. if your parents wind up and they click some weird link like that, they need to know that they can call you and ask for help.
That's right.
You know, and admit that they had done that stuff. You don't want to just sit there and laugh at them because, I mean, that's their, well, safety and financial safety and security.
Yeah, it's their financial livelihood. They may not be able to buy. A lot of parents are living on fixed incomes now. So, and let's start getting into the technology now.
Sure, let's do it,
Billy. And how what started off as Trapped, a VR detective story, which was all about human trafficking, the trail that goes down that, how to spot a victim of that.
Mm-hmm. How to recognize that you're being tricked.
That you're being trafficked.
That's right.
That you're being coerced into this.
That's right.
Because that's something that we kind of need to touch on real quick, because a lot of people don't understand that there is a legal definition difference between human trafficking, human smuggling, and that is the point of coercion.
Yeah, let me do that real quick. So there are three. So human trafficking has three requirements. There has to be an action, a means, and a purpose, and that is very vague. So an action basically means that you're in control of a person, like you're going to take them somewhere, or you're going to make them do, or you're going to have them do something. So that's an action. The means is how you get them to do that, whether, and that's usually broken down into force, fraud, and coercion. So force, like, okay, I'm going to hit you, or I do hit you. Yeah. That's easy. Fraud, I've tricked you into doing this. And then coercion is the thing that no one really understands what it is. So when, and then the third part of action, means, and purpose, and the purpose is for commercial exploitation. So yeah. somebody's making money by having you do something against your will. And in human trafficking, it's either labor, which is, you know, you doing something with your body or work. Or if it's sex, which is also labor. So, human trafficking is basically forcing somebody to do something that they don't want to do, and somebody else is making money off of it. And so that's what human trafficking is. But, so I've taken hundreds of courses on human trafficking. I've been to webinars. I've talked to experts. I've been in group sessions. I've been at conferences. And the coercion and psychological manipulation that is really behind human trafficking, the thing where somebody has something on you, they're emotionally blackmailing you or actually blackmailing you to do things. It's something that is almost never really understood by an audience. So like I watch classrooms where it's one trainer in front of 30 students, and those students do not really understand emotional blackmail or coercion or psychological manipulation. They just don't get it. So the reason that we built this VR experience was to put you in the shoes of a young girl who becomes psychologically manipulated by a professional predator that she meets or that finds her online. So we built this simulation to put people in a victim's shoes so they can understand how it feels. And a lot of what you've got on screen, it's awesome because we simplified this experience as best we could to make it so that anyone would be able to access this. So you literally just look around with that little red dot by moving your head. And then as you encounter objects that are just little yellow cubes or yellow circles on the ground, then you interact with the world like that. So we're showing that this is something that can happen to anybody, where you think the world is a nice place and all that stuff, and certainly is. And this very first part is the first time a lot of people have ever used virtual reality. So we put you outside and you can see the trees blowing around and stuff like that. And the idea is basically to kind of give you a chance to get into the environment and still feel like it's all outdoors and free and freedom, and it's bright and the music is really pretty and everything. And then you go to where she's being trafficked. And when you're in there, it's more closed in. I wouldn't say it's, what's the word when you're in too small of a space where you feel claustrophobic? It's not too claustrophobic, but it's just claustrophobic enough to feel like you go, oh, okay, there's walls around this thing. But the idea that we're trying to accomplish here is we want people to understand what is the psychological manipulation. What does it feel like when somebody has power over you, that where they are just manipulating you into doing things?
Yeah.
And that's something that's very, very difficult. And we found that, for most people, it takes hours in a classroom to really understand this. We've watched teachers use our VR software alongside their PowerPoint presentation. So I watched it at the University of North Texas Health Science Center. I watched a room full of 70 medical students all be taught for 45 minutes off of PowerPoint. And we talked about, Dr. Fellini, she talked about this is happening in America. It's happening to everybody. It's happening in every community that you can imagine. And it happens through this reason and that reason and the other reason. And so the students are all diligently taking notes. They finish the class. It's 45 minutes of PowerPoint. She had a couple of videos. All looked good. And then, she goes, hey, we're going to let you guys use our VR software. And so the students put the headset on. They all go through the 20-minute experience. They take the headset off and they mobbed her like she was Mick Jagger because they finally put the pieces together.
It's happening
in America. You can be tricked by no fault of your own just because you want some attention and some affection. So this young girl in the story, she actually meets what she believes is a young boy online, and he's paying attention to her. Mom's not paying attention. Parents are divorced. Mom's working too many hours. She's mad at her daughter. But she can go online, and every time she goes online, this boy, quote unquote, is there, and he's listening to what she has to say, and he'll pay attention to her. And that getting that attention is the thing that this young girl really wants. And everybody wants attention and affection. Everybody wants somebody to listen to them and their problems.
It's part of the empirical needs pyramid. We've got to have love and attention and physical touch.
That's right. That's why shunning is so powerful.
You take away
love and affection.
That's right.
And people will go back. I'll do anything to be back. And
that's right.
Yeah. So this experience actually provides people the insight of how this psychological manipulation forms, how it can form, and how it can be used to trick you into doing things. And that's really all human trafficking is, where somebody has tricked you or convinced you to do something against your will, and they make money off of it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, because you can be in an unhealthy relationship with your partner or your parents or anybody, and they don't have to be making money off of it, but they could still be abusing you psychologically. They could still be sexually abusing you.
They should be
taking advantage of you. If they're not making money off of it, it's not human trafficking, but they're still being abusive.
It doesn't mean that they aren't using a means of control.
Bingo.
Or something like that.
That's right.
They aren't using a means of intimidation to control your actions, whether it's sexual or not, whether it's for money or not. And that's just it. Even learning to recognize somebody as a prime example is they now have date rape drinks at bars. And that's not like, let me order a drink and get a date. It's if you're a woman and you feel as though you are in trouble.
Yes.
You can go order like a green light.
Yep.
Or something like that. And it basically tells the bartender, please call the police.
That's right.
In fact,
that is a phenomenal example of how bars, restaurants, and companies, hotels, some of them, have actually decided they want to be part of the solution. And part of that solution is, we need to know. We need you to tell us.
That's right.
And they put signs inside the bathrooms that say, order this drink if you're having this problem. Order this drink if you're having that problem. You go up to that bartender, and that bartender knows, aha, you need the police, or you need an escort to your car, or you need, you've got a creepy guy that's following you around.
Yeah.
And they'll deal with that. And those are great, great solutions.
And you know, it really is that idea of, and I hate using the worn out phrase, see something, say something, but it's the idea of not being ashamed to say something. It's the idea of empowering somebody to be able to say something when they're in that situation. And you can't do that if you can't recognize it, Billy.
Yeah, that's right. If you don't know that you're being taken advantage of, that somebody is creeping on you, if you don't have the warning signs.
Or that somebody's creeping on your friend or your loved one, your kid, your family member, your cousin, what have you. You know,
there's a large number of people that do not see those clues. They do not get them, no matter how obvious they are. And usually, I mean, the people that are into this field, are here because this happened to somebody that we knew, or we know, or it happened to somebody close to us. So, I hope that the people that need this information don't find this all out just because it happened to somebody that's near them. They can go get educated themselves. There's lots of books on this kind of stuff. Like one of the books that we really promote is called Emotional Blackmail. It's a phenomenal book, and it teaches you What does it feel like when someone is trying to use your words and your feelings to get one over on you? What does it feel like? And those are things to watch out for.
Well, absolutely, because we've done a lot of episodes lately about NLP and awareness, like neuro-linguistic programming, mm-hmm. and the idea of recognizing the loops in your life, recognizing, the situations that put you somewhere, and recognizing the fact that you have power. You right. have power of consent, and you have power to revoke that consent as well. And no, it's not always, as we just spoke with Jessica Gerlach about, you can't just tell a woman or tell a man going through this situation, why don't you just leave? Because not empathetic to the situation. They may not financially be able to leave. They may not be able to leave because of control issues or fear of harm or fear of harm of their children. There's a dozen reasons why somebody may not physically be able to separate themselves and get out of the situation, Billy.
There's a term for that in some cases. It's called trauma bonding. It's like where you are basically bound to this situation. Yeah. Like if you're, if your husband almost is the breadwinner in the family, it is. It's almost all the same thing. It's this pattern of behavior, the NLP of the whole situation it's all so similar. I can't leave my husband because I don't have any place to go. I can't leave because my child needs this medical care and it's attached to that person's, that person's job. That's right. There's all kinds of things that are like that.
Yeah.
When you said, why doesn't she just leave? Right. That phrase that triggered me to think about a coalition, an anti-trafficking coalition that I went to, a coalition meeting that I went to. And I can't give any of the details about this case, but basically there was a couple of young girls that were being trafficked by somebody. It was pretty much cut and dried, but it took 2 years for that to go to trial and for this person to wind up getting prosecuted and then wind up going to jail. And one of the things that was a constant problem was that the people that would become attached to the case, whether it was an attorney, whether it was the police or whatever, they would actually verbalize. They would be like, why don't they just leave? And it's like, it was so obvious that mindset is so pervasive.
Yeah.
Or the lack of understanding of trauma bonding, emotional blackmail, Stockholm syndrome is so pervasive that we have failed our society if we are not teaching people how that works.
And kind of to that example, like when my wife Amy got in her accident this time last year.
Okay.
When the police officer called me, it was just a random guy who happened to be behind her, who was a former cop from Georgia, who saw the whole thing.
Wow.
And stuck by her all the way to the ambulance, everything.
Rarity.
Absolutely rare. Thank God for that angel of a man.
Amen.
But the first thing he said, been a cop for 20 years, I want you to know this wasn't her fault.
Wow. Right off the bat.
And I was like, my man, I thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thank you so much for looking after my wife. I just have to know, how horrible is it? And how many times have you had to head things off at the pass with that statement, with an abusive husband? To get, like, that statement is based in something, and it is based off of experience.
They say
that to be the knee-jerk response that you gave me, the car's totaled, she's okay, she's in an ambulance, I want you to know it's not her fault.
Yeah. Why was that so needed?
Why was that so uptight? I was like, I don't care whose fault. I don't care if she was juggling friggin' bowling pins while she was driving.
But he knew
that
she was going to get treated as if it was her fault.
That she may have been treated that way, and that it may lead to a worse situation.
Right.
If she's in a bad situation.
Yeah, because that's exactly right. Because what they will be thinking is, well, they probably deserved it.
Yeah.
Or what was she wearing? Or she wasn't paying attention. Or she's a woman driver or whatever.
Or she'll get it when she gets home.
Yeah, dude, it's nuts how that's
horrifyingly
necessary.
Enough.
Well, I mean, obviously that policeman actually understood that if he didn't say that, there were going to be negative outcomes.
There could have been negative outcomes because he doesn't know what the home situation is.
They say that contracts get written because of mistakes that get made, and I guarantee you the reason that thing came out of his mouth is because he saw plenty of times.
Exactly, and that's what I responded with, was like, I can't imagine how many horrible times you saw in your career that's one of the first things that pops out of your mouth as a knee-jerk reaction, man. I'm sorry for that. And, that's a world that we live in. That's a reality that we live in, Billy. We do not realize the fact that these grooming situations, be they sexual, be they labor, like, you may be surprised to find out that you got like a labor ring going on in your backyard in America right now.
The sad fact of the matter is that human trafficking is happening within 1 mile of everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone. It's happening near your home.
You think you're close to a spider right now.
Yeah.
When they say like you're no further than 10 feet away from a spider, like you're no further away than 1 mile away from a human trafficking situation.
Absolutely. And
I've
been trafficked. I've been labor trafficked. I was trafficked by Electronic Arts. And they got me because I was passionate about video games. And I was willing to work 24 hours a day, weeks in a row.
How long was your internship without pay? Was that what it was?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
That. It was I got hired at a certain rate and I wound up working, instead of 8 hours a day, I worked 16 to 20 hours a day for weeks, if not months at a time.
Because this is the project, kid. And
This is the one that's going to make it.
This is the industry. Welcome to the industry. You got to push it to make it.
Right.
You got to make it to push it.
Well, we only hire people with passion.
That's it.
They don't have boyfriends, girlfriends, or wives, or families, ideally.
Yeah.
Well, you know, let's talk a tiny bit about the importance of training about this stuff, right?
Please, because we've got about 10 minutes left, and that is a huge part of it.
I'm on a roller coaster for this. So one of the things that's really difficult about teaching people about psychological manipulation, Stockholm Syndrome, emotional blackmail, all this kind of stuff, where people take advantage of you by using your feelings against you. One of the things that's difficult about that is it requires like almost a one-on-one training where you have a trainer with you and you talk and you ask them questions and you get immediate feedback and you get time to process it and you can ask them more questions.
Mm.
The problem is that there are not enough teachers that fully understand this topic. And the people that do understand this topic are going to be people that have lived experience. And a lot of the people with lived experience are not prepared to go into a room and train people. They're just not. What they do is they wind up and they stand in front of a room full of people that don't believe them. And then they have to convince them that their experience was real.
Yeah.
And they become injured by trying to convince.
They become re-traumatized.
They become re-traumatized by being in a room full of people. And so what our software has done is it allows you to scale to every person, to give them a completely unique, personalized experience so they can be trained immediately. In 20 minutes, you will understand how this works and no one gets hurt. The trainer does not get re-traumatized. In fact, one of the things that the feedback that we get from our trainers is that they have lived experience. And if they've been training for a long time, they go in there and they're like, this is really difficult because I am being re-traumatized while I'm teaching this.
Yeah.
The day that they take our software and these headsets onto the site, the kids take the headset off and now they're the expert. And they ask questions as if they're an expert.
Yeah.
They believe them.
They ask questions with a sense of understanding
now. It changes their entire relationship with the topic,
absolutely,
with themselves.
Absolutely. It's quite literally like explaining to a kid in a book in a 3D diagram of how a V8 engine works.
That's right.
Or taking a kid next to a hanging V8 engine.
Let them touch it.
Letting them touch it,
that's
experience
right.
it, mm-hmm. and I guarantee you their questions will be 180 degrees different. As somebody
absolutely.
Who spent years teaching children, I guarantee you that question will be different.
And you know, when you're standing in front of a room of 20, 30 people, you can see when somebody gets it and other people don't get it, and you don't have time to stop and make sure everybody gets it, right?
That's right.
With emotional abuse, emotional manipulation, you know, sexual abuse, I mean, all the things that are wrapped up inside of this thing. When you get a piece of information in a classroom, you're dropping bombs on people. I mean, this stuff is like emotional, like fireworks for them.
Yeah.
In this VR experience, because you are in charge of how much you learn and how fast you learn it, when you hear something that's difficult, you can stop and think. Just giving the user, the learner, that moment that they can decide, wow, I need to really think about what I just got.
They can decide to engage or not engage with the topic that was just presented.
So powerful.
Totally.
I took a class one time on human trafficking, and it was just like bomb after information, a bomb, bomb, bomb. And I know the material, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, I can't take it. I have to stop this video because it's too much.
And that's a big part of the conversation before we end things is that, you know, and that's a big reason why you have embrace the whole culture of abuse in your training.
That's right.
Is the fact that sadly, mentally, so many people cannot deal with the literal carpet bombing of their brain that the topic of human trafficking is.
Yeah.
It's thick. It's not only thick, it's legally thick. Most people, it takes a little while. Even whenever I've had you on the show before, we typically preface the fact of, hey, folks, just so you know, the first 10 minutes or so here is going to be legally defining our topic
right,
tonight.
That's true. Yep.
Because you literally have to fine tooth comb and go through the fact of a coyote ain't that. Like,
this is not smuggling, this is not sexual abuse, it's not all these things
that you hear them tied with on the news, where it's like 150 victims of human trafficking crossing the border. Like, no, that's not what the case
is.
Not what the case is.
That's correct.
And they're obscuring that, which means that they're now weakening from the impact of what a real human trafficking headline, like if you follow the FBI regularly, you will literally see at least once a month, new bust procures like 100 human traffickers, like frees 150 children from human trafficking ring. These things,
man, I'm
like, go follow the FBI RSS feed,
dude,
folks.
I'm going to throw you.
Will see it once a month.
I'm going to throw some water on that. So I'm involved in a male reflector, right? So it's a Google group of all these people that are in the human trafficking arena. And if somebody has a need, so they're like, do we have a translator, a Cambodian translator in the Georgia area?
Sure.
Or can somebody do this type of counseling in this area? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So as soon as there's a big need, somebody posts on the group and it's like, bam, they find somebody to help with that. Dude, when they have those huge arrests where there's 250 victims of human trafficking, there is not a blip.
Not a peep, dude.
That is not what's happening. They may have arrested a lot of people for prostitution, but they're not saving trafficking victims, and they're not getting those people help. I don't know what they're doing, but if it is not reaching this little mail reflector that's somebody has a need for this stuff, something's
Because so where are the counselors coming from?
Where are the counselors coming from? Where are those people going? What shelters do you think that they're going to? I mean, like, there are not enough shelters right now for people. There's not enough for boys. There's a group. I don't want to give all the names or whatever, but basically it shows that, or they've been showing that with the newer studies, half of the victims of human trafficking in America, sexual victims, are boys. And there is almost a half divide. There's almost no beds for boys in America.
Trying to remember, is it David's House? Something like that. And I remember I gave you their information once because I did an event for them, but they are literally like a shelter.
There's one that's Bob's House of Hope, and there's victims of
human trafficking.
Right.
And it's beautiful, and it's amazing to see
it really is.
How much more awareness has come to this topic over the last many years. The fact that, despite what you may think politically about our previous president, he actively signed some reform into law, some compensation act for human trafficking victims, and that's huge. There's been some progress.
I don't care anymore about who is in charge when it comes to that stuff, because all I care about is the
outcome.
What are the outcomes? And right now, unfortunately, a lot of that compensation stuff is still wrapped up in the details.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's so hard for people to get help. It's so hard to be able to prove that you're a victim. Like I was saying with that one case that was why didn't they just leave? Took 2 years for an almost cut and dry case to get to court and get that guy to go to prison.
Yeah.
This is difficult topics.
And, you know, We have about 6 minutes left, and I'm going to drop a carpet bomb here myself.
Boom.
Because I've been asked by a few people in our community, P. Diddy.
I don't know
what's up. The Puffy situation right now.
I don't know what's up.
And the way I respond to people is never forget, despite any sweetheart deal, Epstein was guilty.
Oh.
First time, second time, full on guilty.
Yeah.
No, like, maybe, oh, you're partially adjudicated. You are full on guilty. It is a rare circumstance, Billy, that they bring those charges without the evidence to back it up. It's pretty rare that somebody's accused of human trafficking and they get off.
Yeah.
They may get off of punishment because of a sweetheart deal, money, something like that, but they're going to have that conviction on their record and it's going to be there. And that's what I keep telling people. I don't know about any videos like with R. Kelly. I don't know if any of that exists. Who knows? He says some people have said he has videos of very powerful people in the same way Epstein did.
I
look at it as it's pretty rare that somebody's brought up on those charges and they are not guilty.
It would be hard to believe that that guy is not guilty, you know, but here's the other thing, right? The people that have, my understanding of the situation is that his house was wired, dude. This guy was running, like, you know, video cameras back way before there was little pinhole stuff. I mean, this guy was, like, recording everything. So maybe that stuff all was, maybe he was a plant. Maybe he was a honeypot. Maybe he was collecting that information for other people. But whatever the case is, now that proof, the evidence is now in the hand of the government.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anybody go to jail for Epstein.
Not yet.
I want it.
Not yet.
I want it bad.
I still hold in my heart. Still hold a special place in my heart to think that he is in a maximum security black site. And that everything that we know of his death is faked. And that there, because you don't hear much about Ghislaine either. You don't hear much. You don't hear
not
many
right
peeps
now.
About her.
Not right now.
About her case. Nothing like that.
Nope.
So I'm wondering how many ducks and P's and Q's they're getting in a row. How many I's and T's they're crossing and dotting.
Well, you could look into the, if I'm not mistaken, the evidence room where all of his stuff was burned.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not supposed to think about that. So it's like, oh, it was a brand new place with this really great, awesome new
You believe
system.
All the gold melted too, didn't you?
Oh, in Fort Knox? I didn't melt.
No, I mean under the World Trade Center.
There was a lot of stuff that melted underneath the World Trade Center.
There was
it
a lot
melted
of stuff
for a long
that melted
time.
Underneath there. Billy,
for a long time.
I love you, man.
You
are a brother
Chris,
from
thanks,
another
man.
Mother. Thank
yeah.
you so much for coming on. The work that you have done with this over the last decade almost, we've known each other.
Time.
It's so impressive, so beautiful to see you come to a box, a package, a send out.
Send you a box.
An active deliverable.
Yep.
Let people know where they can go to sign up for your seed program. Let them know where they can go to get
reefcares.org,
everything.
Reefcares.org, right there on the screen. Reefcares.org, that's short for Radical Empathy Education Foundation Cares. There's videos on there that show you how our system works. It shows you exactly how you can get this program. We will send you a box with a headset in it that's all set up. All you have to do is open the box up and we will show you how to make it work. Show your community. The way that we function is we license the software to you. You purchase the hardware and you can use the hardware anywhere that you want to. Teach as many people as you want forever. We're on a mission to educate people about abuse prevention. Let us be part of your solution.
Absolutely, Billy. I love you, man.
I love you too,
so
Chris.
Beautiful.
Thanks so
Such
much.
Such a beautiful, beautiful mission. As always, anything we can do to help, you just let us know. We're
Got
here
it.
For you, man. Wow. Incredible message. Make sure to stop on by. Check everything out at reefcares.org, folks. While you are online checking out everything from Billy Joe Kane and the Radical Empathy Education Foundation, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can find all the episodes, It's where you can like, follow, subscribe, share, comment. That's where you can find our videos channel with all of our guest YouTube channels. That's where you can find the store with all of the books and videos from our guests. When we come back from this quick break, right after this, folks.
The Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at curiousrealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is curiousrealm.com/store.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back. Thank you so much for staying tuned through that quick break. Thank you so much also to all of our sponsors, especially WebWorks Wireless. WebWorks Wireless is your choice for high-speed internet for all folks. No data limits, no credit check, no throttling. I have been using WebWorks Wireless since we launched Curious Realm. They are our source for our live streams for the website. And I have never been without service. I have never been anywhere that I haven't been able to get service. We could go out and live stream a Bigfoot hunt in the middle of the woods. As long as you have cell phone signal, you will have internet with WebWorks Wireless. Stop on by and check them out. WebWorksWireless.com is the website that you want to use. Our guest in this segment is Michael J.S. Carter. He is the author of Initiation. We will be talking with him about the world of the experiencer, not just what it is to be an experiencer, but how that processes through your life, how that changes your life, how that literally changes you as a person. So welcome back to the show, Michael J.S. Hey. Carter. How are you doing?
Hey, brother. It's always a pleasure. You know that.
Absolutely.
We always have a good conversation. So
yeah.
Thanks for having me on.
You bet, man. And one of the conversations that we have regularly on this show, I like to demystify topics. There are a lot of shows out there that tell stories, that tell people's stories, that but for me, it's more about research, science, and how these topics and how these things impact us, mm-hmm. not only as people, but as humanity. And when it comes to experience, especially alien experience, it runs the gamut, Michael. Everything from, you know, the close encounter of a sighting to to experiences like yours, which can be terrifying and life shaking, much less life changing. So, how did you come to your point of experience to begin with, Michael?
Wow. What helped me navigate it, I think, Chris, is, and I think this would probably have worked whether it wasn't cosmic, if you will, is that I had supportive people. I had people who either had the experience. Now, they may have looked at it very differently, which some did. Some people that, you know, looked at it very differently as not a positive thing or even the potential for that. But also at that point, I was in therapy for some family of origin stuff for a few years. And I finally had enough trust in the therapist to tell them about it. And he was non-judgmental. He supported it. He took it seriously. And that was just healing. And so just to be able to unpack what was going on with me in a safe space, no judgment, you know, there was confidentiality, obviously. And that was healing. That was very, very healing for me. Now, you know, being a clergy person, you know, looking back, you know, Kierkegaard says life is lived forward, but it's only understood backwards. Mm. It was preparing me because I was already leaving the theology of my ancestors. Mm. So, you know, I was reading existential philosophy. I was studying metaphysics, psychic phenomena. So I was already in some ways moving beyond. Now we know that you can still do that and still keep your theology. But then there was no way for me to do that. And so just to have a face that would look at me and register with me, but non-judgmental, even if they, you know, which he didn't say, but, you know, I've had another minister say, Michael, I believed what you believe what happened to you, but I don't know if I believe that, but I'm here for you. That kind of non-judgmental open-mindedness.
Yeah.
Open-mindedness, has been the gift that keeps on giving. Why? Because I do that with other people who come to me. And people come to me, experiencers with episodes that even to me, being an experiencer seems far out. But I've learned to just take it, to process it, to listen, and to shy away from judgment.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think that is a huge part of it. The rush to judgment, especially when it comes to paranormal experience, ET experience, Michael, the idea that, somebody doesn't believe it, you know, it quite literally sets up the same reason why hashtag Me Too took decades to come about, people weren't willing to believe it. They weren't willing to believe it. And the fact is, hashtag Me Too. Like there's a huge population of it. And to ignore it does no good psychologically for the victims. It does no good for people who have experienced a trauma and a traumatic event in their life.
Well, that's what it is. Now, see, for me, and I have to be honest with you.
Sure.
I think that you also have to be aware of who you're talking to. Yeah. There were people I just did not share it with. It's the same thing. You know, I'm like, what does that have to do with what we're talking about if I already know that you're not there? Doesn't make you a bad person or a good person. It just makes you the person that you are. And so I think some people make mistakes because they think, well, this person should be listening. And you don't want to shoot all over people. So that's my responsibility because you have to take care of yourself. You know, I'm not an evangelical. My half sister is. We love each other very dearly. There's no room in her Weltanschauung about what I do, what I talk about. So we don't talk about that. No, you know, we give up being right. I tried to talk to her about it, but she's resistant. And so that's it. But it's also a way to protect me because I don't want to, A, have to keep explaining myself over and over again.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to always rehash stuff. So, But I want, that's why I put it in the book, you know, some of the things, because I think it would help other people, even if you have a loved one. Maybe you're not the experiencer. Maybe your loved one is, or maybe your friend
is. Right.
So, you know, and I've navigated it pretty well. I think the other thing is that I do have a life outside of this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I have a family. I have a beautiful wife that I love and adore. I have a child. I have my other interests outside of ufology.
Yeah.
And so I have a balanced life. So I'm not obsessed on this one aspect of myself and putting myself in a box.
Mm.
So that helps too, because no matter what you do, I'll give you an example,
please,
an illustration. You've got to live your life. At the beginning, when I was having these visits pretty consistently, you know, we've talked about that. At the beginning, it was twice a month, every new and full moon.
Wow.
But I had a dream, and in the dream, I was in like what I'll call a scout craft, a pod, and I'm driving it. Okay. And there's a gray person in the front seat. It was like a two-seater. And in the dream, the gray person says, "You come up front and drive." And I said, "No, I don't want to do it. I'm afraid." And he pushed me. I'm using the pronoun here. He pushed me. He kept saying, "No, you got to do it. We're just going to stay right here. You've got to do it." So I get, and somehow in the dream, I'm up front and they're in the back. And, or on the side, it's something like, I think it was back though. And we go forward, which is positive, and I wake up. But I got it that the message of that dream was, because I was obsessed with it. I mean, nothing had ever happened to me like this.
Sure.
And I was buying all the books I could get on it. And, but the thing I got out of that dream was, we're not in charge of your life. You are. We're not, you have agency and
yeah.
You can't depend on it. Because in other words, I was making them God, which is probably what our ancestors did.
Mm.
But I was just so obsessed. Well, what do you think they want me to do? What do you want? You know, and that was a powerful moment that I'm still in control of my own life. This
yeah.
is, this doesn't define me. This is something that happened in my life, but it just doesn't define everything that I am. That was big for me because I was
yeah.
letting it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I was letting it.
Absolutely. You know, and it's hard, whether doesn't really matter what the traumatic event is, Michael, mm-hmm. even addiction. You know,
yeah.
people let that define them as
yes.
who they are. And even that can lead to bad things. You know,
yeah.
even though you're a recovered person, things like that, it can still lead to you being broken. So the fact that
yeah.
you understood that, like you said, that returned your agency to you, that returned your literal consent
yes.
into the system
yes.
to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It made you understand that. You were consenting to making them into that.
I was, because it shattered my whole reality. And it was, I started to see as time went on that this was a good thing, even though it was bizarre and it was frightening. You know, because we can put ourselves in boxes. I remember, like, I wrote two books. I wrote the book on spirituality and prayer, and I wrote the book on, you know, that meditation manual, God Consciousness. Mm-hmm. And I wrote that because I didn't want to be known as the UFO minister. Now I am, but at the time, I just had to prove to myself, now it was all along theological lines, that I do other things, that I write this new book of sermons that just came out too. It's just affirming that, yeah, he has more than one niche. And I do, but that was big because I know people. Thank you for doing that. I just know people who they're one dimensional that way. And I remember some of my friendships broke up. Not that the people were bad, but if I wasn't talking about, if we weren't talking about
yeah.
UFOs, then we couldn't carry on about anything else. And I didn't want that. And so I just kind of drifted away from some folks because I had, you know, I just wanted to live a full life. And so I think that's crucial for any experience or even anybody with any addiction that you know, and that's what the 12 steps are about.
Sure.
Obviously the interior work, but also that you start living a more fulfilled existence because you're more fulfilled. You're living a life of forgiveness, and that's, you know, and authenticity, and staying in your lane, and that kind of
thing. Well, yeah, and understanding the fact that you are fulfilled because of you. It's not your experience that made you fulfilled. It's not your experience. Yes. Kind of, we talk regularly on the show, Michael, about the twisted idea here in the West of, that Jerry Maguire phrase of "you complete me," and what a heavy yes. burden that is to put on somebody to say, yes. like, without you, I am not a complete human being. I'm not happy. Yes. I'm not like, no, you need to be happy and fulfilled and complete in you, and understanding mm-hmm. that this experience was a moment in your life that may have steeled you or moved you in a different way or brought you to a different vibrational understanding of the universe. And it's beautiful that you were able to get to that point. And of all the books on my shelf, Initiation is one of my favorites because it really does get into that spiritual connection, with your experience and mm-hmm. how that, because once again, you were already down the path of seminary. You were already down the path of, reverendship, mm-hmm. ordination, all of those things. So, it's not like your experience brought you to that, but your experience of that world changed because of your alien experience.
It did. It brought to light thing. You know, Plato says that all learning is remembering. And I have to say, in my experience, I agree with that, because what the experience did for me, one of the things it did for me was I started not only ruminating and, yes, I know we're all one. Yes, I know that what I do to you affects me. I knew all that intellectually, but this kind of just opened me up more. Mm-hmm. And I had the physiological changes, but I also had the spiritual changes where I was more vulnerable. I was willing to share my fears with people I trusted, more willing to say, I love you. I don't know. That was a biggie. You know, I was just the armor that I had on that. Part of that was being in Gestalt therapy as well.
Sure.
So I don't want it to be a magic wand and, oh, wow, this guy had the, no, I worked hard and I was working towards that, but they kind of expedited this and got me into the healing work. The energy healing work, that kind of thing. And it has changed me for the better, I think. But I'll give you an example.
Please.
It's an open secret. Obviously, I'm doing this radio show with you, and I do, but I don't talk about this all the time. I don't feel a need to. Yeah. There was a woman who came to my church about a month ago. She's a channeler. And she channels what she says is an extraterrestrial being.
Okay.
I don't know. I looked her up. She told a friend of mine at church. And I was a little upset with this friend because she went and told the channeler, well, you know, Michael is an experiencer as well. It wasn't a big deal, but I don't go around. I don't even know this one.
It's yours to share. It's yours to share.
So the woman calls. She emails me and she says, and I don't even know her. I've seen her. She's shaking my hand in the receiving line and left, her and her husband or boyfriend. But, you know, she's like, well, we have something to talk about. And I'd like to have lunch with you. And I, you know, I wrote back, we can have lunch in my office. But my point is, I don't know you. And so you're making a leap that just because we may have the same experiences that I want to talk, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And she never responded to the email, my response, and she hasn't been back to the church. But even that tells me something, and I don't want to be overly judgmental, but I, you know, let's get to know one another first. Yeah. And I told my friend, I said, you know, listen, it's my story to tell. And of course, they say, well, you do Ancient Aliens and you do these podcasts. Yeah, but those are my choices. But you're telling a total stranger. And I don't want that kind of relationship, because if the woman, she said she was thinking about joining the church. Well, if you join my church, you know, I'm not your friend. I'm your minister.
Yeah. That, well, so and that shouldn't boundaries. Be the predicate of choice of joining your church.
There. Yeah. 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 So, you know, but she never got back to me, which was okay. Yeah. But my point in saying all that is that I'm not the kind of person that if you say, oh, I channel an ET and I'm going to say, oh, yeah, and I'm an experiencer, we need to get together. No, because I don't know you.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know you.
And once again, it's one of those, is that what you want the relationship based
to be
upon?
Based on?
You yeah. know, I have dated more than one person that has been victimized sexually in my life. That was not a hot topic of conversation when we got together.
Exactly.
Even my experience in the seminary. Isn't typically the first point of conversation.
Yes.
That I get, not even typically the second or third date conversation.
Yes.
I hope.
Yes.
You know?
So, you know, you work into it if you work into it at all.
Yeah.
But definitely, as being, if I was going to be her minister, A, I probably would not have shared that with her. And if I did, it would have been on my terms.
Yeah.
But B, she didn't even want to do that, to meet in my office and talk. So it was okay. But it's just having those kind of boundaries. Help, you know, good friends make good neighbors, as yeah. Robert Frost says. And so, but those were probably things I probably couldn't have done before.
Hmm.
Before the therapy, before getting to know, you know, because if you don't have good boundaries, you're not going to respect anybody else's.
Yeah, yeah. And that's an important point to bring up. Actually, yeah. Because understanding, especially as somebody who is inquisitive, as somebody coming from the outside of said experience.
Yes.
I have had my sightings. I've had my paranormal experiences and mm-hmm. even my true experiences of the divine, but they're mine and they're different, from experiences such as yours, such as Sev Talks. Such as Kathleen Martin's, who in the beginning, very much saw their experience as a point of victimization.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. See, I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't yeah. at first. It was just something in me that knew this wasn't, I wasn't a victim. I was just scared. What's going on here?
Yeah.
But what they taught me, and I don't mean that, you know, anything sexy, but they sat me down and said, these are the secrets of the universe.
Yeah.
What it taught me was this. I grew up in a very, 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 very fear-based family. Mm. My mom was extremely fearful of everything. And she had her own issues in life. And so what happened was, when these beings, as bizarre as they looked, and some of the things that were done to me, they taught, you know, into the experiences. I don't know, maybe I got this a year down the line, maybe longer. They never hurt me. Once I shared with you, they did, but it was by mistake, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So it made me look at my fears. That what are you, outside of the bizarreness, and we get that, and the suddenness,
yeah.
What, and I had to say to myself, my God, your life has gotten better. You're more in tuned. You're certainly more powerful than you were. You're certainly, there's a depth to you. And that's why I had to look at, what are you really frightened? And I'm not saying you shouldn't be frightened, but I'm saying I wasn't frightened to the point where I wasn't open to a deeper level of these. Now, this was afterwards. But,
sure.
But you know, and obviously the people you mentioned, something shifted in them, and it can take time.
Oh, sure.
And then there are some people that it was a terrible experience, and it is. There's no sugarcoating it. It's just the way it is.
Well, and
they're both very real.
Well, and once again, you were already going through therapy at the time that this happened to you, and you happened to have a very open-minded therapist who you felt that you could be very, very honest with. And when you approached him with this, he didn't say maybe you need a couple days at the local institution.
No,
things like that.
But the thing is, I didn't tell him until I was already years into the therapy.
Yeah.
It wasn't just right away, because my therapy was about some other family dysfunction stuff.
Yeah.
But I got into it. I said, well, I'm telling him everything else. And he was a student of A Course in Miracles. So he knew about the channeling stuff. So I figured, well, he's into metaphysics to a degree.
Sure.
But again, you know, I wanted to make sure, because it's very important that you protect yourself. It's very important that there's self-love there. Yeah. And by that, I mean doing the things that nurture you. You know, you know, if people are not hearing you or abusive or whatever, you need to pull back from them. You know, when you're tired, you need to rest. When you have to be very gentle with yourself, because you're reintegrating your whole what is real. And so even that in and of itself was something different. So and it could be a near-death experience. My God, it could be something great. It could be some Kama Sutra experience that shatters your reality. We know that that happens. It could be an NDE. It could be an OBE. That it's outside of the box of what science is telling us is real, even though that's changing. And so you have to be careful who you bring it up with, because you have to protect yourself.
Yeah, and that is an all-too-real reality. Michael, the idea of having to have the conversation with somebody who understands, you know, and we've had the conversation on here before about the world of the experiencer now, and being able to find help, being able to find a common community, being able to find resources like the experiencer resource team with MUFON. These things did not exist a decade ago. They didn't exist 20 years ago.
I know. And that's when it was happening.
The conversation is different now. Even if you were to post something on social media that you had an experience, the response would be different than society 5-6 years ago.
You know? Exactly, which is promising and exciting, because the consciousness has changed.
Yeah.
And how has that happened? Shows like this, shows like Ancient Aliens, whether you know, it's not the hardest science that we can come across, but it's opening your mind. And what is it? Oliver Wendell Holmes, once the mind is stretched, it doesn't go back to its original dimensions. UFO conferences, certainly what Brother Grush and what other folk are talking about now. So you can see the shift happening, but just imagine 20 years ago, 25 years ago, you could be medicated.
Yeah.
And lose your job and everything else. So, you know, I remember those days, but I was fortunate. I found a support group. I met Bud Hopkins. He regressed me. I met Dr. Jean Mundy. She regressed me. I got to meet John Mack.
Wow.
So there was some support. Zachariah Sitchin in New York was a neighbor. So, I think that once I was open, the right book came my way, the right person came my way, because I was saying yes. I was saying yes to life. Mm. And so opportunities were there. And more people are having these experiences or experiences like this, whether it's Bigfoot, you know, Sasquatch, whether it's an OBE, whether it's you got a healing when you were at Lourdes or whatever it is. And you got to have somebody to talk to that about, who's going to respect that. Otherwise, we do what our ancestors did. When the Roman church said, if you're doing A, B, C, D, E, you can be excommunicated. You could also be killed. You know what I mean? What did folks do? We went to our little catacombs. We went underground, literally and figuratively. We found other like-minded individuals, like the Cathars did. What, you know what I mean? So it never goes away. That's why we all this native wisdom and Aboriginal wisdom about star people and all that. It just wasn't mainstream because it wouldn't be accepted.
Yeah.
So you go underground, but the knowledge is always there. Now, it's more out in the open, and it can remain that way. And so that's what I did. That's what human beings do. If I can't put it out here, I'll find my little group and niche. I'll go underground, but it'll still be there. And so, nothing is more exciting when something that's been hidden for so long can finally come to light.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to carry that burden. You know, it takes a lot of burden.
It does.
To keep secrets. What's the old saying? You know, you're sick as your secrets.
Yeah.
And that goes for families. It goes for individuals. It goes for governments. It goes for nations.
Institutions. And everything.
Yeah. 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 You're as sick as your secrets.
Yeah.
And so, when you can kind of let go of hiding, and that's a metaphor for everything.
Sure.
When I don't have to hide, when I can be me fully, then I can let you be you.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you were in a unique position, honestly, especially with your reverency, things like that. You belong to a beautiful community that has accepted your experience. It has accepted, the marriage of these teachings, Michael. And unfortunately, there are many, many experiencers out there. There are many people out there, who, for lack of a better word, are bound by their faith and bound by their religion, to see these things in a different light, to see these things in the light of evil, to see these experiences in the light of demonic attack, things like that.
Yes. Yes. Now, I want to be clear.
Yes.
I'm better off, no doubt.
Absolutely.
Better off being in this liberal denomination. But I if I talked about this from my pulpit, they would let me go.
Yeah.
I don't bring this up. I mean, I touch on it.
Sure.
I may say a prayer and include the star nations, or I may say something about the multiverse, or, you know, I may reference it. But no, it's still too much for them. But I'm freer than most. So I will give you that.
Yeah.
But, because I want to be clear, I remember a few years ago, people came to the church. They saw ancient aliens and they were in the North Carolina area. They came to the church and they were quite surprised. I said, no, it's not a UFO church. It's a UU church. We don't talk, you know, this is not where we're coming from. But to your point, definitely. I told you, I've talked on this show, there was a woman who wanted to get me fired and came to the board of trustees, big donor.
Yep.
They stood up for me. They said he's not forcing it down our throats. He may be right, but we don't think he should lose his job over it. So there's still that, but definitely better. And you bring up a good point in this way, Chris. There are a lot of people like you and I who are seminary trained, may dabble in a few languages, who know that what we're saying is true, that we've been visited, that there's been paleo contact. But as you said, because of the restraints put on them, whether it's academia or theology, they have to decide how far they can push the envelope without losing everything.
Yeah.
Without losing their congregations, without losing their tenure. You know, and I think it's a point that needs to be, you know, I'm glad you brought it up. It needs to be emphasized because everybody who's hiding it is not in some big conspiracy, but you have to say, I got family to feed. I got mortgage. I got this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
And I'm going to come out and go, guess what? You know, that has to be taken into consideration as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, once again, it's, I don't know. I belong to a lot of communities and I see, I guess, both sides of the situation. I can fully see how somebody might see somebody's experience as dark, I mean, there was a situation. It's honestly one of the only interviews that I have ever deprecated, Michael. And it was with another reverend.
Wow.
I had interviewed him previously. And we had a great conversation. He's fantastic, actively incorporates the ideas of UFOs and the Bible into his sermons, all kinds of things. It's remarkable stuff. However, I was at a conference and an experiencer was there. Her experience was, having a near-death experience where she went to the void. Not a great white light, not what her Christian upbringing had brought her to understand the next life would be.
Right.
And in this experience came before an experience of contact. And the two were very, very stealing for her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this gentleman had someone in his group had purchased the book and came up with a literal list of questions and cornered her at her booth and began to, go into her experience in the void and how she did. Why don't you believe this was demonic? Why don't you believe this mm-hmm. was from the other side of,
and, yes.
You know, yeah. She was like, I can appreciate.
It's not a good feeling. It's not a good feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very much brought this beautiful individual with an amazing experience, which changed her life. You know, there are people who would even say that your experience, because it was not invited, Michael, would be demonic in root.
Yes. Know? Yes. I've heard those things.
And it's hard when somebody tries to tell you what your experience was, much less the, when they, Go. I mean, he took mm-hmm. it to the extreme of like, I understand you may believe it's something else. If I was to discuss the spiritual ends of this, I would need to talk to the man of your household. Like it got deep and thick.
Yeah.
And to the point where I was like, I can't let this man's message go out on my show.
Right.
Because he has harmed this individual and her experience. You know, and
this is why people leave religion.
Yeah.
This is why people say they're still in it. This is why people are leaving the church in droves.
Yeah.
Because of this kind of perspective and this kind of self-righteousness.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a lot of the reason why I love talking with you because, it's important for people to understand that, spirituality and religion are two separate things. You know, one leans on the other and you can't have one without the other. However, spirituality is different than
in this 21st century. Definitely. They weren't always, but they are now.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the way I explain it to people. Religion is what you do with other people of like mind and belief on a Wednesday evening or Sunday afternoon. Spirituality is how you take that into the world around you.
Yeah.
And how you interact with the world around you and other people of non-like faith because of what you believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
And it's a shame that we've had to parse it out that way.
Yeah.
And maybe that'll change, but, you know, it's not going to get, there's not going to be less experiencers. There's going to be more.
Yep.
And there's, you know, obviously there are the people who don't even come out with it. And for whatever reason, that's fine. But people, we're finding out that millions of people have had these sightings that have had these experiences. And, the narrative now, unfortunately, is that only the government can tell you what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, but I get that because you have to control the narrative. Yes, pilots see this phenomenon, but other people have had the experiences of this, and it's good to be able to hear those voices as well. But right now, we see it being co-opted a bit, and I think the reasons for that are obvious. They may not be the same choices I would make. But there are everyday people out here. They don't fly Delta. They're not pilots. Some of them work at the post office. Some of them may be homeless. Some of them are just trying to make it every day, and they're wrestling with this. And their stories need to be heard, not co-opted, but heard.
Yeah, yeah, no, and that's just it. The idea of the common empathy, the idea of being able to listen to somebody's story and not sympathize with them, you know, not feel sorry for them or feel their plight, but
or even
to
believe it.
Yeah,
but just to hear it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And all too often, I think, and we've had this conversation on here before, the whole reason for the previous incarnation of this show, Dudes and Beer, existing was the idea that, we were only having conversations to try to convince somebody of a paradigm. Yeah. Not having conversation with an open mind and open heart and just hearing what somebody understands and believes and leaving it at that, not trying to change somebody's belief, but trying to understand what they believe, why they believe that, and incorporate that into your world.
You know, it's interesting. Yesterday I had service and we had our Mother's Day service, and my topic was Julia Ward Howe, beginning Mother's Day and taking that back into God, you know, when God was a woman and how we can move forward with that feminine aspect of creation. And so a friend of my friend with the big mouth, she brought a friend of hers in and we talked, we hit it off. As a matter of fact, they invited me to lunch. I said, no, I'm going to see my friend. I got a podcast today. Her friend is going back to Maryland. And so she had never heard of Unitarian Universalism. Mm. And she was a staunch Catholic, but she was kind of having some doubts. And she said something that was very telling and very revealing and I think very courageous. She said, you're open-minded. I didn't bring up UFO stuff, even though I know this woman told her. But she says, I was raised Catholic. And I gave her a lot of literature on UUism and UUs in Christianity, that kind of thing. And she took it. And she said, I'm going to read it on the plane. But she said, I'm afraid at the same time that I'm curious. She said, because I've had structure. And I've been told that this is wrong and this is right and this is it and this is it. And she said, what you're saying is, or what I feel that you're saying is, that you can be the one, either the God in you, she didn't use those words, or you can bend some of those boundaries and what have you. And I didn't say that in so many words, but that's what she picked up.
Yeah.
And she said, I'm curious, but right now, I'm afraid of that kind of freedom. Mm. I thought that was beautiful.
Yeah.
That she could go there. And you know, we just talked, right? I didn't say, oh, well, you should be doing, I said, I got it. Because when it's time for her, or if there's time for her to make a different step or another step, she will.
Yeah.
She will. But just to step outside her fear and to say that to me and come to the church, because they could have went and had brunch.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, even your understanding of the fact of your job as minister is only to educate one's conscience. That's it.
Yes. Yeah. And that's all any of us can ever do.
Yeah.
You know, that's what Plato was right on about that. I can trigger something in you to make you remember, but the rest, that's up to you.
Yeah.
Just like it was up to me. And I think that's a key to how we can get along, in the sense that I'm telling you what you should be doing in your life. I have enough I have enough stuff in my life to take care of that I'm having problems with. Yeah. Now I'm going to tell you what you should be doing with yours. That's crazy.
Well, and it's also pretty darn well un-American.
That too.
My favorite turn of phrase is, I'm pretty sure I woke up in America where I have the right, God-given right, to make any stupid decision I want.
That's right. That's right. And I can tell you how to make yours too.
That's it. You know, it's one of those, the minute you revoke any choice, you have revoked America. You've removed it. You've removed America, capital A, from the equation as soon as you have removed choice. And I mean, it's one of those when it comes to religion, I will say for a long time after I left the seminary, it was rough. It was rough. You know, it was hard for me to, attend church and not have somewhat of a Machiavellian point of view of the blind cattle, you know, following the call.
Yeah.
And it took a long time for me to come to the enlightened point of view of, despite any call, despite any revelation I may have had in life, God bless anybody who finds the time to come to church, who finds the time to answer that call, even if they haven't had a call, you know, that good on them for going and doing what they believe is right on the daily, on the every Sunday, on the every Wednesday. If it takes them going into a building and being with people of like mind to experience their God, more power to them.
No question. Where two or three are gathered, you know?
Yeah.
I have no problem with it. And I always try to remember that I was like that at one time.
Yes.
Before I became so clever, and I'm being selfed anyway, but before I knew there was a UU church, before I was having these experiences, I was in the American Baptist Church and with all the restrictions and everything that came along with
all
that,
the trappings.
I'm saved. You're not. Jesus is my, what's the old saying? You can worship God in your way, and I'm going to worship God in His.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of certainty. Now, I may not have been as insufferable as that, but that attitude was definitely there. And so I've evolved. My understanding of Christianity is much deeper, because a lot of people in our society feel that if you evolve from religion to atheism, like somehow that's the highest evolute. But you can evolve going from atheism to believing in a God.
Absolutely.
Believing in order. You know what I mean? And we don't hear a lot about that. It's like, this is the other evolute, you know, where you don't believe all that fairy tale stuff anymore. But there's another evolute where you don't have any of that. And you go, I like this story. This story resonates with me.
Yeah.
Thinking of C.L. Lewis. Right? I mean, he was an atheist. And he became a great apologetic for Christianity. What's that? The Narnia series and whatever.
Yeah.
So. And I think that as long as we say yes to life, a healthy dose of that, a healthy dose of also that, you know, there's always doubt. What if I'm wrong about what is the skepticism? But if you say yes, what's Nietzsche's quote? If you can endure the, if you can find out the why of life, you can endure anyhow.
Yeah.
I love that quote. But, you know, I'm open to life, the peaks and the valleys and anything in between. And that makes me a fuller, it can make me, doesn't have to, more self-realized individual, which I believe is what we're supposed to be anyway, as we evolve. And it doesn't have to be from UFOs or anything else. They can help, and they can hinder. But I think this whole phenomenon, and you and I have talked about it, and, you know, it really is about that inner journey. It's not about the tech. It's not about the laser weapons that we're now using or talking about using in war. It's not about, can I use these time machines to go? I mean, that's exciting and all of that. It's not about, you know, the isotopes, and the whole scientific jargon around it's in there, but it's about, do I have the consciousness to even be able to handle that without blowing myself up?
Yeah.
Without, you know, destroying the planet.
Yeah.
that kind of thing.
Yeah, and the
in my opinion.
Well, no, exactly, and understanding the fact that the way I've been explaining it lately is we by all ninth grade science are a conscious vibration.
Yes.
That is attracting this physical matter.
Yes.
Reverend, we are attracting this physical matter to us. And when we now granted that physical that vibration can never be created or destroyed. It's an energy.
Thank you.
Always exists. Will continue to exist. When we vibrate that one level higher, we will shed this physical matter that we're currently attracting. Like we've all agreed to be on this vibrational level. We have somehow agreed to be here together. Aside from this interview, Michael, we have agreed to incorporate ourselves into this corporeal being for this amount of time for some reason. And when that is finished, we will vibrate one level higher, we'll shed this, and we'll move on to another part of the universe where our energy will do something else.
Yeah, but it will be there.
But that's physics. Like, that's the actual science of this.
I'm hearing you. I'm hearing
weird.
You. It's not, for our audience, even though you're talking to two seminary-educated people, this is not philosophy, this is physics.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting to note that, they are one and the same. That it is no different.
That's what we can learn from our space friends.
Yeah.
Because they've combined, not all of them, but they've combined the spiritual with the technical.
Yeah.
But somehow they've evolved. Some of them will tell you they've destroyed their planet or they've had a hard time and they had to evolve to that. But they have that marriage of how to navigate time, space with their ships and also to live, now I won't say a utopia, but also how to engage without fear and without, I got to destroy you. I've got to make, some of them have reached that evolution. And that's what I think I'm paraphrasing, but Einstein said science without religion is lame and religion without science is, I don't know, I forget the quote, but you need both.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you can't have one without the other.
Well, that is the one thing that I keep saying is that I love the change to UAP. Because it brings to the point, the phenomenon, and whether you're talking spirituality, religion, science, all of that is exploration of the phenomenon, of the phenomenological, of the outside of the ordinary, minute that you lose that concept, like I forget, it was a conversation I was having on social media not too long ago where somebody was saying that it was a priest that was saying that, we've somehow, gone to ology and to science. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Theology itself is an ology. Like there ain't no definite. Here, Padre, I'm sorry if you wear a collar and you spent 12 years, but I'm pretty sure the idea is that it is forever changing. It's not a static. It can't be a static. Like by definition, it's an ology. It's a study of something. So,
agreed. No, agreed. And I think again, that's that kind of attitude is why people are leaving churches in droves. Revelation, we have a saying in our denomination, revelation is not sealed. Jesus was healing people back then and he's people, you got healers now.
Yeah.
And we forget that he says, greater works than I do, you can do. So it's a continuing evolution. Everything's on a continuum. But if you want to stop it because it's the good old days or whatever you want it to be, life doesn't do that.
Yeah. Evolution doesn't
do
that.
For some, but fortunately for others, life is going on. And there's another God, I forget what they call it now. It's not UAP. It's I'll find it and get it. But anyway, it includes aerial phenomenon and underground, undersea, and the earth.
Yeah.
I forgot the acronym. But because now we know that some of these beings may not even be from space, or maybe they were originally, maybe they live underground, but some of these vehicles can go under the water. Some of them can live under the earth. So as we evolve and as we get more knowledge, hopefully that knowledge will turn into wisdom, but the conversation changes and the ologies change. They don't go away. You just add to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this priest, you know, it's, what's the old saying, you know, everything that, you know, it becomes blasphemy before it's truth. This is what happened to Desjardins, right?
Yeah.
You know, he gets thrown out of the Catholic Church. He's a Jesuit because his theology was bigger than what they were willing to acknowledge. And so as a pioneer, so he gets thrown out of the church. But, it's always those pioneers, the people who are coming forth ahead of the line, that you got to take the slings and arrows. But you're making it easier for those who come behind.
Yeah. No, precisely. I mean, Magellan put up with a lot.
Oh, no question.
You know, before and after. But we need Magellans. We need people who scientifically and even spiritually are willing to explore.
Yeah.
Michael, and willing to explore the boundaries of connection. Mm-hmm. Between these things. And that's where I'm at, is the fact that these things are connected. The spirituality and the paranormal, the parareal, are 100% connected. So
no doubt. Plato was talking about this 2,500 years before Jesus. You know, people go back and go look at Phaedo, Timaeus, Critias. You know, he's talking about a fractalized universe, talking about the time before time, which is what Einstein discovered, talking about reincarnation and the gods. And, so there's a whole lineage and history of this. And I'm proud to be a part of it. And I'm proud to be on your show and for you having me on the show.
I always love our conversations, man. They are unbridled and go to great, great spiritual depths. So
permit me to do something, please, shameless. Please. You guys need to take a listen to Experiencer.
Oh, thank
by
you.
By Christopher Jordan, volume 2. It's a meditation. It's music. There it is. It's for the experiencer, for your nervous system. It's healing. I listened to it yesterday. It is healing. It is calmness. I would say it's interdimensional if you let yourself go.
Thank you.
While you're listening to it. And he's the real deal. So I'm going to plug that.
Oh, thank you. I greatly, greatly appreciate that. I mean, I sent that out to a few people, you being one, because you are an experiencer. And,
yes.
It was designed specifically to help people get past their PTSD, especially those who are recent to their experience, who may not have come to terms with it yet, who may not have come to their full spiritual understanding of what that unique experience in the universe was made for them. So,
It's beautiful.
Well, thank
you. And I say, between your creation, this experiencer, and initiation, it's a 1-2 punch.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Absolutely. Before we let you go, Michael, of course, let everybody know where they can go to get your books, where they can go to keep up with
Amazon.
All of your fantastic work.
Are on Amazon. I have a book of sermons. These are the books that are coming up that I've written. I think you will enjoy them. You can reach me at Michael J. S. Carter @gmail.com. My Facebook page is Reverend Michael J. Carter. I will respond.
Yes,
I prefer the email, but you can check out the Facebook page as well.
Well, as always, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for everything that you do in the world of
thank
not
you.
Just your flock, but with the flock that comes to you about these things as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you for giving me that opportunity, and let's be in touch.
Absolutely. Hold the line real quick while we close things out. While you are online checking out all of the amazing work of Michael J.S. Carter, you can stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com/store is where you can go to find all of the books from our guests. That's where you can go to find all of their music. That's also where you can go to get your connection to Experiencer. ArtOfChristopherJordan.com is where you can go to get the album Experiencer, which just hit markets this last week. So once again, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for your time, for your open hearts, your open minds. That is what makes the conversation. And without the conversation, humanity does not move forward. It doesn't happen without you. So remember, stay curious, everybody. Take care of yourselves. Take care of everybody else. And we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault, or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services, as well as KPNL Radio, APR TV, and the Curious Realm app for Roku devices. Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media and Aftermath Media family of podcasts. For more great shows and members-only content, visit groundzeromedia.org and aftermathmedia.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always